Welcome to your commercial-free, uninterrupted investment show, sponsored by the SEC-registered investment firm, Wilsey Asset Management, a fiduciary firm owned and operated by President Brent Wilsey, who has been putting clients' investment needs first for over 40 years. The Smart Investing Show has been giving unbiased financial information for over 27 years on local radio stations right here in San Diego, providing you with fundamental analysis on stocks and investments you want to know about. Now, here are your hosts, Brent and Chase Wilsey.
Well, hello and welcome to Smart Investing Show. I'm Brent Wilsey, president of Wilsey Asset Management. Great to have you here on the Smart Investing Show. We got, as always, a lot of things here to talk about to make you a smarter investor. I know interest rates are high, and we're going to be talking about cash and money markets are not long-term investments and why people might make that mistake and what you should be doing with your long-term money. Also, too, AI and jobs. People concerned that AI is going to take your job away from you. Well, maybe it's going to add to productivity. We'll discuss that. And then Apple reported earnings, last week. And we'll talk about what's going on with Apple in China. Chase, what do you got?
Well, also, too, we'll add to that by looking at several different companies here, break down those fundamentals, look at the balance sheet, look at the valuation ratios, give you an idea of what we think about those companies, buy, sell, hold, potentially. Companies we'll look at today, Starbucks. They were in the news last week. Also, too, kind of mentioned Apple. We're going to parlay that initial topic with Apple and actually talk about the numbers for Apple to give you an idea what those numbers now look like. And then we'll also look at Chegg. Now, Chegg is a company that is kind of more focused, obviously, on the online education side. And just kind of curious. I mean, the stock hasn't done well. Maybe there's a value opportunity there.
And Chegg is a name that I've heard before, but it's not a well-known name. But once we talk about what they do, oh, I recognize that name, especially if you went to college, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a name that I think people recognize and know, but maybe have no idea about the stock.
Well, we'll inform them. All right. Well, let's talk about cash and money markets are not long-term investments. With many companies in the stock market more expensive than we like to see, we have been sitting on more cash in a money market than we normally would. While the 5% or so interest rate is nice for the time being, we're using this as a temporary parking place until we find a good long-term investment. It could take 1 week, or maybe it could take 3 months, but the important factor is we are not considering this as a long-term investment.
Now, I know many people right now are happy with their money market rates and would totally miss a great opportunity if it presented itself to continue investing in the money market. I believe this will be extremely damaging for their long-term returns, especially as short-term rates are likely to fall. Looking long-term, cash will likely not beat stocks. And in a recent Vanguard paper, they showed global stocks, not even here in the U.S., just global stocks, earned about 6% more a year than cash from 1901 to 2022. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty long track record showing how well stocks do in the long term. And oh, by the way, that includes the Great Depression in 1929. So there's, yes, ups in there, but also some major downs. It definitely shows you stocks' long-term benefits. I always tell people here, don't become complacent with the short-term yields, as you could miss a great investment that could help you over the next 3 to 5 years. And it's so important because the whole point that we're kind of look at here for people is I think people, I'm not even going to bother looking for a stock right now because I'm getting 5% of the money market. You could be slapped in the face with a huge opportunity like, it's not worth it.
I'm getting 5%. Who cares? I'm satisfied. And the thing is, you can't be complacent because things can change 6 months, a year from now. We all know that rates will come down. We're just not sure when. And when it does, then it's too late to say, okay, well, now I'm only getting 3% of that money market. What should I do now? You could have missed some great companies that were on sale over that time frame that are paying a 3% plus dividend, and you missed out by just being complacent with that 3% or that 5% money market you're getting now.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I've been now with you full-time in the office about 10 years here, and I do believe this point in time is one of the more, I'm going to use the term cautious, that we've been in terms of our cash position. I mean, we have more cash. This is probably the second or third most cash we had. I remember in 2019, we had a good amount of cash. 2021, we had a good amount of cash just because things kind of got expensive. We couldn't find anything to buy. I mean, we're kind of in a similar situation now where, you know, we've looked at probably, I'd say, in detail, 2-3 different companies. haven't been able to pull the trigger on them. Still, things are a little expensive. But, I mean, don't get us wrong. If things pulled back, if we found that opportunity, we will invest. It's just not yet.
And so the discipline that I've been doing now for over 40 years is where you say, you know what, I'm not going to overpay for these businesses or these stocks, these equities, whatever, based on the strong fundamentals that we use. And it's worked out very well. And what happens when things get expensive, you can't find anything to buy. And when you get a situation like, remember when COVID happened, I think it was March, April, May, we were buying like crazy because everything was on sale, did not know, you know, when it was going to turn around, but we said, these are great businesses on sale. So you stick to the fundamentals. Discipline is very important when it comes to investing, but don't feel complacent with, well, I'm getting 5%. Why should I do anything? I mean, 5% return is not that great. I know at 10%, your money will double once every 7 years. At 5%, it probably would take 14 years, I guess.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not a great investment. So what worse is that when rates come back down, that's when the sales will be gone. So you got to be always looking. I mean, we're always listening, always reading, looking for something on sale. We've got a list about 10 businesses, 10 equities.
Right, about that.
Yeah, and we're watching them, but they're just not on sale yet. And when they go on sale, we'll buy them. Could be tomorrow, could be next month, could be 6 months from now, but we will wait. We'll do what's right. And I do want to point out, too, that people do confuse short-term rates with long-term rates. They think that when short-term rates come down, long-term rates will come down. Not necessarily. There is a yield curve where generally the difference between the short-term rates and long-term rates can be 2 to 3% difference.
Well, a normal yield curve is, upward sloping. So generally a long-term yield is going to be higher than a short-term yield. So these are not, I'd say, normal times on money markets. And, you know, enjoy them. I mean, as I said, we're enjoying them while it's a temporary parking place, and that's the key word, temporary. Mm-hmm. There's just too many people I know that I talk to. It's like, I'm just not going to invest. And that's the biggest mistake you can make there, is not even being open to investing because of the money markets. And when I say we're sitting on a good amount of cash, I mean, I'd say most of our portfolios still probably have, I'd say on average, somewhere around 15%, maybe 20% in cash. It's not like we have 100% in cash. I know too many people that are out there, they have just too much in cash. You got to still be ready and willing to invest.
Yeah, and I will point out, too, that also includes CDs. CDs are a short-term instrument, not for long-term investing. So you may be getting a 5% yield on that one-year CD or whatever. When that comes due a year from now, you might say, oh, well, I'm not getting 5%. Now what do I do?
And I'm still not even recommending long-term bonds.
No. <You know>? So I think you had a conversation with somebody, and they've been in bonds for, 3 years? And I think you said they made no money at all, lost money, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you just have not done well in bonds. I mean, you look at the bond index over the last 3 years. I was looking at it for another client back in 2018. They kind of were looking at, we should have maybe done a little bit more asset allocation. I said, well, back in 2018, had you bought the bond index, the price on the bond index is down somewhere around 10%. What, now some 6 years later? I don't know. I think we've done a little bit better than being down 10% 6 years later.
Yes, and actually, that's why the Smart Investing Show, we try to guide you and point you in the right direction. And I remember a few years ago, like, don't buy bonds. Why would you buy a bond for 10 years that's going to pay you 1.5%? Made no sense.
Interest rates, 1%. We all know interest rates go up, bond prices go down. I think I'm going to buy some bonds. Great idea. Come on.
All right, well, let's move on and talk about AI and jobs, because some people are worried about the artificial intelligence taking away many jobs. I remember hearing about the same concern when computers first came out, but in reality, they created new jobs. Investment firm Goldman Sachs projects that by the end of 2034, artificial intelligence could boost the GDP by 2.3%, according to the Census Bureau's November 2023 Business Trends and Outlook Survey. Only 3.9% of businesses nationwide have used artificial intelligence, which includes machine learning, natural language processing, virtual agents, and voice recognition.
Also, another survey by Deloitte discovered that 87% of private businesses who were surveyed expect artificial intelligence to increase their labor productivity within the next 3 years. It is true that change is always scary, and it is true that AI will replace some jobs, but it will also create jobs that haven't even been thought of yet. It will also make our economy more productive, which then should increase the overall wealth of consumers and, frankly, help with, I think, society's wealth as a whole.
And make your life easier as well. I mean, the computer made things a lot easier, and things will become easier. And there's always been that concern that, you know, technology is going to take away my jobs. And it will take away certain jobs. I always kind of make fun of the fact that back many years ago, probably about 80 years ago, when you went to an elevator, there was an elevator operator that had to push a button for you. Remember telephone operators? Yep. All these jobs are replaced by technology, but they created new jobs and different jobs, and that will happen. What's so important is that it increases productivity, and productivity is very important because it, you can make more out of the economy, which makes people grow their wealth, and they can invest more too.
Well, I mean, we always talk about, you know, just different jobs that come about, obviously. And, you know, one that I told you about was, it, you know, I obviously got married now a couple years ago, but my wife has her best friend getting married this year. And she was saying, did you know there are now, like, people that follow you around on your wedding? I'm not talking about photographers and videographers. There's a social media manager that you can pay to go around and post live for you your photos and videos during your wedding day. That wasn't a thing 5-10 years ago.
No, it was not.
So, I mean, that's the thing that's going to happen. I mean, I think that's an extreme example. I still don't personally know anybody that's used them, but I heard that that's a thing. So,
as big as social media is, I'm sure there's people I've used on Instagram.
Oh, I'm sure as well. TikTok, who knows what's going to happen TikTok's future, but, you know, people still love to post those things live. So, I mean, it's going to be the same thing with AI, where you're so right. There's going to be people that maybe it's like, aggregating all the AI data that maybe somebody wants to see for reports. I mean, there's definitely ways that are going to come about from AI that'll create new jobs, but 100% you will see some people lose jobs, but we'll have to retrain the workforce to actually change with the times. I mean, again, people, when they were telephone operators, what does that translate to in terms of a new skill? Not much, but you have to just learn something new.
And that's the key. You've got to learn something new. And people... A lot of us don't like to learn something new. It's like, no, I like doing what I was doing. Well, now that doesn't help anymore. So now you got to find something else you like doing. And it's just something that is part of progress. And can you imagine if we had no progress at all, that we'd still be in horse and buggies?
I don't even know if we'd have buggies.
That's right.
Maybe not even horses. We wouldn't know how to train them.
So don't be afraid of technology and advancements. Embrace it. I know it's hard, but again, it will be helpful. It will increase productivity, which will increase a country's net worth. And many things are positive to it, but change is hard.
And coming back to the investment front, we've talked a lot about this. Is people are like, are you investing in AI? I tell people, yes, we're investing in AI. Oh, you got NVIDIA. No. We don't have NVIDIA. But the companies we own will benefit from AI as it increases productivity, efficiency, and will actually generate, you know, stronger margins, and it'll be a benefit to us as shareholders. So don't think you need to buy the NVIDIAs to invest in AI. There's a lot of different routes that you can still benefit from the AI productivity boost by just investing in good sound businesses.
And they said back in the old days, with the gold rush, the money was not made in gold. It was made in selling the picks and shovels. It is the same thing, you know, and it's much safer to buy companies that will benefit from AI than trying to find the next NVIDIA or the next AI company that's going to do well, because that's a crapshoot. Maybe get it, maybe get lucky, but we're not concerned about being lucky. We're trying to find investments that will do well and benefit from AI. So good point there, Jace. All right, well, let's talk about Apple and China, because they reported earnings last week, and relations between the U.S. and China are rather strained currently, and Apple could be paying the price for that. In the Wall Street Journal, they released information that the company has discounted phones in China by $70, which normally sell for around $600 on average. Now, when I read this, I said, wait a minute, we can't get a phone here in the U.S. for $600. So they are actually getting a less profit over there at $600 in China for their phones, and they have to discount it. On a side note, would it be great to get a phone here for $600? Yes, consumers in China have been switching to Huawei phones as the government in China and consumers begin to feel more comfortable with the company's technological progress.
Now, if you remember a while back, we did post that the Chinese government had banned the use of iPhones in government agencies. So Apple is now fighting with the government of China, despite what Tim Cook says. I know he says everything's okay in China. I just don't think everything's okay in China. Also, too, they are also fighting with the FTC, or the Federal Trade Commission, in the U.S. I know they're having issues in Europe, so they're kind of having a lot going on. And they're definitely in the middle of some major storms, which could go on for years, hampering sales growth for their products. This could cost the company their premium valuation on earnings, which we'll get to talking about the numbers for Apple, which means no stock growth going forward at best. Also, there could be a pullback in the stock on the horizon if they are not able to return to sound growth. And I got some other talking points for Apple I kind of want to get to when we look at the stock evaluation. So just something to kind of keep an eye out for. But, I mean, the China situation, I don't know if you saw on CNBC yesterday, they were talking to the new Chinese EV company that was going public on the New York Stock Exchange, and I'm totally blanking on the name.
Oh, yeah, and I saw it, too.
It's owned by Geely. I know that's the parent company. And it's like Zerkers or something like that.
Yeah, it starts with a Z. But, yeah, I saw that. But go ahead.
And the CFO was saying, he mentioned something along the lines of, well, a lot of our consumers prefer the Androids over the iPhones.
Yeah.
And I said, wow. Huh, interesting.
Yeah, and that is interesting. So you got the Androids, you got Huawei. I mean, Apple's got some tough competition in China. And China was, and it was for a while, it was their big competitive place to be at because there are so many people over there. Well, they seem to be losing the market share, and I know that we don't get too much in Apple, we'll talk more about it later, but the AI side, they're trying to get that to have people go to their phones, but I don't think that's going to work in China. I think they're having trouble with China.
And I still got to say, I mean, if you're hinging on China, and we talked a lot about Tesla last week. If you want to hear more about it, listen to the show last week. I'm not going to get into it. I went on a long rant there, but I'm going to point out mainly Apple and Tesla. It concerns me, the Chinese market, because what we're doing here in the U.S. with TikTok, and if we do ban TikTok, could the Chinese government get in a tick-for-tack type debate and say, fine, you want to ban TikTok? We're going to remove Apple phones. We're going to remove Tesla phones. We don't want, you know, the U.S. to have the data from our drivers. We don't want the U.S. to have the data from the Apple iPhones. And you know, I'm not saying if it's right or wrong to ban TikTok. I'm pro banning TikTok, but I'm just saying that could prompt more concern from the Chinese government. Ultimately, it's a communist country. We talk about that a lot. The Chinese government could one day wake up. Doesn't even have to be a lead up and say, nope, no, we're done.
And to depend on China to sell your products, I think, is a very concerning thing. And I have read also that China and Russia are getting closer. And Russia hates the U.S. So if you've got a friend and he's friends with somebody that hates you, that friend is in your ear all the time. He's going to tell you things that you may not want to hear. So it's something that you have to kind of consider what is going on there. I would not want to depend on China for my long-term sales growth. It would just be something that would be frightening for me. I guess I would say that.
Yeah, and I look at it and don't get me wrong, there's a risk with any business. And frankly, if Apple and Tesla trade at, let's say, 10 times earnings, and there was the China risk out there, it wouldn't be a problem. But they both trade at premium valuations. Everything has to go right. Having that China risk at a premium valuation is what concerns me. I mean, there's other companies, maybe they do have China risk, but they trade at 10 times earnings. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's not a big deal. It's not as troublesome.
Troublesome, yeah.
You're not going to have as large of a multiple compression versus trading at 30. I think Tesla's still at 50 times earnings, somewhere around there. All of a sudden, China's sales fall off. You can't trade at 50 times earnings. No. Not to mention your earnings will fall, which then means your stock price will fall even more because now you're getting a lower multiple on lower earnings, which equals a much lesser stock price.
And I think the talk about depending on AI for your stock to move up, I think is becoming less and less effective because everybody has AI. So it's kind of like, oh, okay, so your phone has AI. Okay, so does everybody else. So anyways, if you want more information, this all comes from our newsletter. We're also talking in the newsletter about EV demand, meat prices, labor productivity, very important, the Robin Hood lawsuit, what makes a stock valuable, no show and late fees, Apple stock, all these different things we talk about. That's free to our newsletter. Go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. You'll see it right in the middle of the page. Click on the newsletter, send it out, and you'll get the newsletter every Friday at 5 o'clock. All right, time to talk to our financial planner, CFP Harrison Johnson, talking about the tax rate on gold. And I think this is very important because I saw yesterday on the news that millennials are buying more gold. But let's talk about gold. Harrison, you with us?
Yes, I am. How's it going, guys?
Good, good. So let's talk about the tax rate on gold because this is one thing I don't think people think about.
Yeah, so investing in gold has been fairly popular recently, but it's important to understand how that's going to ultimately be taxed. So federally, there are seven tax brackets, 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, 37, which ordinary income is subject to. Ordinary income is sources like wages, interest, IRA distributions, things like that. Then there's also separate tax brackets for certain types of investment income, like long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. And depending on the amount of taxable income you have, your tax rate is either 0, 15, or 20%. Plus, you could have an extra 3.8% net investment income tax if your adjusted gross income is above $200,000 or $250,000, depending on how you file. So basically, that type of investment income will always be taxed at a lower rate than if it had been ordinary income instead. So investment income, capital gains, dividends, always going to be taxed at a lower rate. Then there's this third set of brackets that is applied to income from collectibles, which that includes gold. Gold is considered a collectible from the IRS's standpoint. So if gold is bought and then sold later on for more than it was bought for, you have a collectible capital gain, which is taxed at ordinary income rates for those who are in the 10, 12, 22, or 24% tax brackets. So instead of getting those lower capital gain rates, it's still ordinary income if you're in those first four brackets. For people who are in the higher brackets, the 32, the 35, or the 37% brackets, gold is taxed at a maximum rate of 28%. And you can also still have that additional 3.8% net investment income tax if you have higher levels of adjusted gross income. This tax rate includes investments who are backed by physical gold, like a gold ETF, which a lot of people are investing in now. So if you're considering buying gold, be prepared to pay more taxes than you would on other types of investment income.
And Harrison, this is something that I think is surprising to people. And at first I thought, oh, well, the rich are getting a break here because gold is taxed at 28%, but then you got to tack on that 3.8% net investment income tax for higher AGI. So you really don't get that much of a tax break being on the higher income side. But the other thing, too, that I don't know if you're prepared for this, but I know in the office on Friday we talked about the returns on gold. And, you know, now I'm thinking, well, what is the after-tax return on gold? It's not really that good. Do you remember the numbers from Friday?
So looking back to 1980, so here we are in 2024, so this is 44 years ago, the after-tax return on gold, annualized from a compounding perspective, is a little over 2% per year, which if you look at inflation over that same time period, inflation is about 3% per year. So actually, you know, looking back over 40 years, gold has underperformed the rate of inflation.
And that's taxable. So you're going to lose another, depending on your bracket, you'll lose another 20 or 30%.
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of crazy because when you look at, okay, what's the tax rate on gold? Well, gold's a collectible, which if you, you know, try to do research, all you can really find is it's taxed at a maximum tax rate of 28%. But when you actually look at how that applies to the individual person and, you know, the tax bracket that they're in, if you're in the 24% tax bracket or less, that means for a married couple, you are have income levels of about $400,000 or less. So that's a lot of people. So for most people out there, if you have income from gold, you're looking at basically ordinary income tax rates plus, again, maybe that 3.8% tax on top of it. So there's not a lot of tax advantages to that. And, you know, when you bring up how that's actually performed over the last 40 years, the return has not been that great.
Not to mention another thing we talked about was expenses, because that was the spot price for gold. So the gold ETF, I know we discussed, had a 0.4% management fee or expense ratio. And honestly, that's even better than if you buy physical gold, because then you have the commissions on the buying and selling of gold. And then you have potentially storage costs, unless you just, you know, keep it at home, which I guess is an option. But then you got to buy a safe, you know? I mean, I think the spot price for gold is even the best case scenario for how gold is performing. And what shocked me as well is, and I encourage you, look at a long-term chart for gold prices. There's periods of time where gold falls 50% or close to 50% from their highs. And people think gold is so safe. It's not. I mean, you can have huge, wild swings that you wouldn't anticipate.
Yeah.
And that's a good point that you bring up too, Chase, because one of the ways that people look at volatility is with standard deviation. And the standard deviation over the last 40 or so years for gold is almost exactly what the standard deviation is of the S&P 500 stock market as a whole. So, you know, you think about this safe, conservative, non-volatile asset when that's not true at all. It's the standard deviation is like 18%, which is very volatile.
Yeah, and people just don't realize that. They say, and again, those millennials, oh, I'm going to hold it forever. I'm not worried about the pullbacks. But when it pulls back and it's down.
50% potentially.
Yeah, 50%. But it takes 2 years maybe that happened. Every day you look at down again, down again. That wears on you. And eventually that's why people don't do well, because they'll sell when things are down, even though the commitment was, oh, it's a long-term investment, I'll stay with this. No, you won't. I'm sorry. Your emotions will get the better of you, and you'll sell at the worst time. And why? To maybe get a 2% return.
Especially where gold is now, I don't see it doing well from here. I mean, people are like, yeah, but it's done really well over the last year. Honestly, that worries me even more that it's done really well over the last year.
Well, guys, now it's like it's not buy low, sell high. It's like buy high, and hopefully it goes higher.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's something that I think you got to be careful of. And I mean, you always hear commercials on the radio about it too. And I always tell people, be careful and ask if somebody's trying to sell you gold, how much are they making from selling you gold? The commissions we know are quite high.
Yeah, they're very high.
In many cases, they're more than annuities are.
Yeah. And those are very nice.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. That's why the guys that sell commodities do very well. But boy, they've got a tough job. Very, very volatile. Yeah.
It's a tough job because nobody should want to buy physical gold from them, honestly.
I guess it's an easy job to make a lot of money, but it's a tough job if you're not a good salesperson.
Yeah.
So,
and I just want to reemphasize real quick as well, I know we got to go to break here shortly, is, you know, Harrison talked about the less than $400,000 in income. I mean, 0.15% is, again, your capital gains rate, not ordinary income. I mean, those are great benefits that you are foregoing by investing in gold.
Right. Well, Harrison, thank you very much. We appreciate it, and we'll see you on Monday.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you Monday.
Okay. That's Harrison Johnson. Again, if you want a personal consultation with him, give him a call at the office, 858-224-004. That's 858-224-004. Or go to the website, smartinvesting2000.com. Again, that's smartinvesting2000.com. You listen to Smart Investing Show. Brent Chase, stay with us. We'll be right back after this quick break. All righty, welcome back to the second half of the Smart Investing Show. We got the companies we're going to talk about now. We're going to get right into it because we like to spend time discussing the companies, talking about the financial side, but also about the businesses, the equities, the companies themselves. So you understand more about when you go get a, first one up will be Starbucks. If you go to Starbucks, maybe understand more of what's actually going on there. So.
I thought you were going to say when you go to Starbucks and you get a Frappuccino or something, you're going to be ready to go for the day, you know?
I've not been to Starbucks in quite a while, and we did a post on our social media. And you know there's still boycotts against Starbucks?
No, I did not.
Yeah, I didn't know either. They go, yeah, it's still going on because of, I guess, political things that they've done and stuff. And people said, no, we don't go to Starbucks anymore.
I feel like I got more negative on Starbucks than positive when we did the post. Somebody called it Charbucks because they think they char the beans too much, the coffee beans.
Oh, really?
And weren't impressed with the flavor. I didn't really get anybody that's like, no, I still go to Starbucks every day. But I mean, I know obviously it's still pretty well visited because there's still a lot of them.
Yes,
and
there's
still people that go there. But right. I didn't get any diehard Starbucks fans, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
When we do posts about cryptocurrencies, people come at you.
Yeah.
Starbucks, nobody came at us on that.
No. So let's talk more about Starbucks and go over the numbers here for you so understand what's going on with the business. And we'll talk more about it as we go through here. But their symbol, if you want to invest in Starbucks, their symbol is SBUX. They're in the industry of restaurants. About 76% institutional owned. The PE ratio, not as bad as it used to be. Still not on sale, but 21 versus 27.5. Price of sales, 2.4 versus 2.6. no price to book value. So that means if you take away all their liabilities, there's no value to this company, which is disappointing. And the price of cash, well, 13.3, that is better than the industry at 17.2. And the PEG ratio, which tells you how much you're paying for the future growth, not very much, which is a positive, 1.2 versus 5.3. Now, the earnings over the last year are up 17.9%, but the industry of restaurants is doing very well. That's up 50.2%. And the sales for Starbucks were up 7.4% when the industry was down 2.7%. Now, the five-year growth rate on Starbucks is looking pretty positive. I guess more people are drinking than we think, or estimated up by the analysts here. 15.6% is the five-year earnings per share growth estimate. That's above the restaurant industry of 10.8. Now, they do pay a dividend of 3.0%, which is pretty good, and the payout ratio is now 60%, so that's a positive. We do look at the balance sheet. Current ratio, 0.9 versus 1.1, and no debt to equity because they have no equity, and they do have debt. But that could be a problem. This company does continue to have problems. That could be a problem for liquidity for the company. We do see the net profit margin 11.4% versus 9.7. So virtually every time you go in there and pay $6 for that cup of coffee that they have, the frappuccinos, whatever, 11.4% goes to the company. That's how much they're making off of that. And return on equity, well, wow, a negative 49.2. I don't know why that's a negative. Return on invested capital is a positive 28.2. Chase, what do you got going forward?
Yeah, so looking here at the current price for Starbucks, again, their ticker symbol is SBUX, $76.11. And yeah, over the last year, it's down close to 30%. Year to date, down close to 21%. See the 52-week range here, $71.80 is the low, the high, $107.66. We go forward for Starbucks. We go out to September 2025. They do report on a fiscal basis rather than calendar year. I see estimated earnings per share of $4.15. Unfortunately, that gives it a target sell price is still just $68.89, so below the current price at $76.11.
Wow. And they, as I said, they're still kind of expensive. The estimates over the last 9 days have dropped by about, they went from $4.79 to about $4.65, so that they are dropping. But this company is facing headwinds. We talked about Apple in China. I think they're having trouble in China as well. Also, too, what I'm concerned about is there's more and more unions coming into Starbucks. And what they were talking about in the conference call, I watched some of from the CEO, that they're going to try to improve efficiency. Well, I don't think the unions are going to be able to improve efficiency.
No, I don't think so either. And it's funny, I'm less worried about the unions, honestly, because I don't think they'd get their growth here in the U.S. I think they'd get their growth in international markets, which, again, it still trades at above historical market multiples, which means you better be growing, but where's that growth coming from? And it's so funny, actually. They mentioned Luckin Coffee in China as a competitor.
Yeah, and they're still around, aren't they?
Yeah. they're still a stock that is there. And it, for people that aren't aware, years ago, Luckin Coffee, the stock plummeted to like $1 a share because there was like accounting fraud, essentially. They were cooking the books. But hey, you're a Chinese company, so it doesn't matter.
The government says you're okay.
Yeah, but now they are actually, it appears, to be competing with Starbucks effectively in China.
And I mentioned if you want to invest in Starbucks, I gave you the symbol. But one thing I want to kind of look at, as Chase pointed out, it's not just a U.S. growth, but international. How much is U.S. growth? How much is international? Because if it is reversed where, I don't know, I'm just throwing out numbers, 80% U.S. and only 20% international, I think there's problems. But maybe it's reversed on that.
I just don't see. I mean, there's so many Starbucks locations. I don't see how they could grow more in the U.S. I could be wrong. I could be misinformed. Right. But I don't see it. And, I mean, I know here in San Diego, I mean, my wife doesn't go to Starbucks. She likes to go to the kind of more local places. Right. Like, it's called Better Buzz. There's, like, a Lofty Coffee. I mean, there's these kind of, like, San Diego-based coffee shops that I know a lot of people. There's one called Campa that's right in Rancho Bernardo. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's these, I think, kind of smaller ones that I know a lot of millennials, my generation, like to go to.
Right. And actually, we talked, you know, because we're preparing what we're going to talk about on the show today. We talk about maybe next week looking at Dunkin' Donuts because I think that the growth on Starbucks here in the U.S., I'm not as familiar with overseas. I think it is slowing down because people are saying, yeah, $6 for a cup of coffee. I can go to these other places and get something pretty close, maybe just as good for $4. And you're right. I mean, in Rancho Bernardo, Scripps Ranch, there is a Starbucks in the Vons. And then you walk about, a tenth of a mile in the parking lot, there's another Starbucks. You go down the street under the bridge on Mercy Road, there's another one there. So in a vicinity of a mile, you'll have three Starbucks.
Even in Rancho Bernardo, there's the Albertsons of Starbucks in there. And then you walk out the door, and what's the next closest thing?
Starbucks. Yeah, it's just something that I think they're over-concentrating. What you could see is that they'll start closing stores to save money. And what that means is write-offs. That means they've got to pay severance packages and everything else.
Less, revenue will decline. If you close stores, profits will increase, but revenue would decrease.
But not initially because of the write-offs. So you will have that lag to where the stock, and that could be the time that to buy the stock. If they can fix the business and they take those write-offs and the stock falls, so I'll throw out there $50 a share, that could be a good time to buy it because it's not going to go away, but it's just expensive. I make pretty good money, but I still say, gosh, $6 for a cup of coffee?
I don't even drink coffee anymore.
Yeah. I kind of stopped. I stopped last week.
Yeah. I drink my tea. I like little tea bags.
Well, anyway, Starbucks, we're not going to recommend it as a buy there. So if you have it, I would even say, I wouldn't even hold it.
I have never seen Jim Cramer go off on a CEO
him
go off on the Starbucks CEOs. Yes. It was intense.
I've seen that. And the CEO was kind of like taken back, like, it was pretty amazing. So that's Starbucks, not giving a buy on it. Do you want to talk real estate yet, or you want to go on to Chegg?
Let's talk real estate.
I think Robert's waiting here for us. So let's turn to our real estate expert, Robert B. Hick, who is president of Countywide Mortgage Lending. Robert, you with us?
Good morning. I'm absolutely with you.
Well, good. We're glad to have you here today. And talking about why people are buying real estate for cash and then getting a loan, because I know that the cash buying seems to be up and we question that, but you've got a different twist here to talk about.
You know, we're seeing it being about a third of all purchases right now where folks are buying with cash and then afterwards turn around and getting financing. So I get these calls, they bought a home 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and now they want to get their money back out because they got to get it back into their investment before penalties and taxes and things of that nature. And so we sit down, we go through the format, and we look at three things. We look at appreciation and what it's forecast for the next couple of 2-3 years, the amortization benefit, and then of course the tax deductibility. So when we see this, it really becomes one of those things where folks are just trying to get the best price, but then turn around and finance it over a period of time where it makes sense.
And Robert, one thing I'm wondering here, because you buy the home for cash, you're going to lose some return on investment, obviously, but can you do it like in 30 days or 60 days, or you have to wait at all, or is there any time limit?
2 days.
Okay, 2 days. So you can turn around 2 days. But and then my next question is, so you do it 2 days later. Is it easier or harder to finance a home after you own it? Or no difference?
So great question. It used to be an issue. But now once it's recorded and we know everything's in there, they call it a delayed purchase is the correct terminology for it. And so it's just like a purchase. As a matter of fact, used to get a hit for interest rates for it to be a cash out refinance, and now a delayed purchase actually gives you the same interest rate as if you're just buying it regularly.
Wow. Yeah. And again, I think they've come full circle on that, realizing that more people, as you said, are doing this.
And is it just because, I mean, you kind of said people want to be more competitive, so they might say go in all cash, the seller doesn't care, so maybe they'll get a little bit better of a price if they go all cash?
That's what they're hoping, but it's been so prevalent lately that whether you get a loan or you go in all cash, it's really who's paying up, Chase, and knowing that the certainty of that they're going to close. That seems to be the biggest trick. Everybody wants to get into escrow, but they will definitely want to know that it's going to close. And so where you have cash, there's really not a lot of obstacles, right?
Mm-hmm. And Robert, I was wondering, I mean, you know, are we still in this level where there's a certain part of the market that is still just very hot? Is it, you know, the low end, the middle end, the high end? Where do we stand on that, the pulse of the market?
It has slowed, definitely because of how many properties are out there for sale. But that being said, if the home is priced right, we're having multiple offers.
Wow. Well, that is good. And there is a price point, though, because isn't on the higher end, you're not getting the multiple offers. I know when our neighborhood went on sale for, I was kind of surprised, as many people were, what it was on sale for. I won't say on air here, but it is on the higher end. Is there trouble on the higher end?
There's two that went on in that neighborhood, and yes, there's a few people that looked at it. They've actually been knocking around a couple of offers, but nothing yet. So when we start getting above a couple $1 million, you know, that's rarefied air. You start getting into the $3, $4, $5, $6 million stuff. Yeah, it takes a special buyer, period.
Yeah. And that end is, where is the sweet spot and to be selling
really,
right now?
Joe Sixpack is who we talk to a lot, and it's between $1 million and $2 million.
Well, that's pretty good then. And you're seeing those cash offers. And I've heard it's from people coming down, because I guess we have here, Apple's going to have a corporate office down here or something, some other technology coming down, and people from Northern California coming down with a lot of money, and they just pay cash.
And that's, we were just talking about the houses in the neighborhood, and that's who was looking at them. Some folks came down from the Bay Area, they looked at it, and they're like, you know, as I started doing my research, they had 7 others. They're adding to the collection is what it looks like.
Wow. Well, Robert, thank you for that information. That's great as always, and we'll talk with you more next week, and you have a good weekend.
Can't wait to hear about Dunkin' Donuts. I'll talk to you all next week.
Do you go to Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about Dunkin' Donuts next week.
Dunkin' and Peterson's, of course.
Okay. I think Frank's a big Dunkin' Donuts guy. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Frank loves Dunkin' Donuts. I wish you had a mic, Frank. Robert, we'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that's Robert B. Hick. He is president of Countywide Mortgage Lending. You can contact him directly on his cell phone at 760-443-3821. Again, that's 760-443-3821. Or go to the website, countywidemtg.com. Again, that's countywidemtg. And you may not be ready to buy yet, but you can get the ball rolling, find out more what you can afford before you start doing. So contact Robert. He's a great guy to talk to.
Or apparently, even if you just bought and you want to get a loan, contact him again.
Yeah, that's right.
but just a reminder, Countywide Mortgage Lending is a division of Golden Empire Mortgage, Inc., NMLS number 1104585, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Countywide Mortgage Lending is an equal housing lender and proud member of the BBB.
All right. Well, Chase, you read that a little bit too quickly there because I don't have a Chegg. Is it Chegg or Chegg?
Chegg.
Chegg. Chegg pulled up. Yeah, because I want to pull up those numbers. And Chegg is a, I guess it's a, well, education training services company. That's what the industry that they're in. And wow, short on this company. Oh, their symbol, by the way, is CHGG. The short is 22.3%. That means a lot of people, well, about 22% of the outstanding float, are betting this stock is going to go down so they make money. We do see that they do have a bad start here. The P.E. ratio is 36, which is very high. This is not a technology company. We do see price of sales looks good, though, 0.8 versus 2.1. Price to book value, 1.7 versus 5.9. That's a positive. Price of cash flow, 2.6 versus 19.3. That's very good. And the PEG ratio, again, the lower the number, the better, 0.2 versus 3.9. So that looks pretty good. Here is probably the big problem. Earnings per share over the last year are down 90.2%. That's just a terrible thing. You'd have to look into it to find out why. Hopefully it's not just from sales, that they had to have some write-offs or something, but earnings are down 90.2%. Sales have declined by 6.5%. And when you look at the industry growth is much, much better. The earnings are up 843%, and the sales for the industry up 51.8%. So it's not the industry that they're in. This is definitely a company problem. Now, here's a reversal, though. The analysts for the five-year growth estimate on their earnings, they give it 20% is what they think they're going to grow the earnings over the next 5 years. So that's a big positive. Compare the industry to 11.5%. They do not pay a dividend. Taking a look at how safe this company is based on the balance sheet, current ratio 0.9 versus 1.9. Not quite enough liquidity there. It's not bad, but it's definitely not good. And then debt to equity looks okay, 0.6 versus 0.4. They do have a net profit margin of only 2.1%. That's about half the industry at 4.2. And return on equity is only 1.5. We like to see that at least 12 to 15. Chase, what do you got?
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, I remember this company actually when I was in college. This is where you can rent books.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. Are they going to have a Netflix moment where Netflix was able to go from, you know, the DVDs to the streaming platform? Chegg is trying to go from, you know, obviously textbooks to more of an online platform. I'm not sure. I think it's kind of funny. I pull this up here. With your subscription, you can get a free Tinder and DoorDash pass. It's like, are you guys really having to reach to get people to
It sounds like it, yeah.
A little bit problematic, but, you know, this is an online platform. Big issue here. Year to date, stock is down, gosh, about 58%. The current price here, $4.68. The low, well, $4.67, so pretty much right at that low, we'll call it. 52-week high, though, $13.11. Now, the interesting thing is when I go forward for Chegg, I go out to, I believe it's December, yep, December 2025. I see estimated earnings per share here, $1.08. I mean, it gives us a target sell price of $17.93, so the valuation is very strong. I believe this is what we call a potential value trap. The valuations look strong, but I worry that there's not much growth for this company. I know the analysts believe there is, but I don't know where it's going to come from. And one thing that pressured the stock was the concerns that more kids are now using ChatGPT. I know there's the Anthropic, the cloud is what it's called. I mean, they're using that instead of these online tools with Chegg. And Chegg says, oh, we're going to benefit from AI. I don't see how.
And that's important because this could be a company on sale that is a great buy. But you really have to understand how they're going to turn that around, because you need, when you're in school, and do they do high school too or just colleges?
I'm not sure. Okay. I was in school, it was because high school you get free books.
But somebody has to provide those books. They got to provide them to the school system.
Yeah, I don't know if they do that.
Yeah. So, and again, if you're going to invest in this company, you want to know the answer to these questions that we're asking. But again, what I'm looking at is that you've got to learn somehow. Now, we've talked about this chat.
I always forget GPT.
GPT. It's not always accurate. And if I was a professor or I was the head of the school, the chancellor, I say, no, you can't use that because the information is bad. We've seen it ourselves. We look at something, we know that was incorrect. So you still have to have some type of learning tool. And maybe it's not the book with the pages, but some type of online thing. This could be a great buy or it could be the value trap,
but
you got to do a lot of research to understand the future of books and education. And you may find a diamond in the rough here. Or you could have a value trap and lose all your money.
Yeah, I think I'd pass on it. And it's funny, we're value investors. We generally like things on sale. We like things with good valuations. But I don't see the future for this company. And it's something, if you were looking at buying it, you'd have to understand how will this company grow. And how they say they'll benefit from AI. How will they benefit from AI?
I'm going to push back on it a little bit. I think it's worth the research. I wish they paid a dividend. They don't. But, I mean, you've got a decent balance sheet. You know, you're not paying much for the book value. They got a good PEG ratio, the 5-year estimate on the analyst. I think there's some reasons to maybe take a look in here, but you really, again, have to understand the future of education and colleges and see if that is the only books that they provide.
They also have language, and I think they talk about trades and other things as well. So, I mean, they do have different platforms. So,
yeah. Well, worth a try. That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying worth a try. Chase is saying value trap. Again, that company is Chegg. Their symbol is CHGG. Yeah, take a look at it and make your own opinion there. All right. Okay. Let's turn over to this company that nobody really knows anything about, never heard about, called Apple, that we talked a little bit about in the beginning of the show with China. But there's so much more to Apple than China. Let's take a look at the numbers, and we'll talk more about it as we go on. Apple reported earnings last week. They're in consumer electronics. Nobody's really short in this stock. It's 0.7%. I'm surprised to hear, only institutional ownership is only 56.7%. That means a lot of people hold it directly themselves, which is Surprising, but maybe not so surprising. With a pullback, they still have a P.E. ratio of 28.5. That is below the industry at 35.1. Price to sales, 7.5 versus 4.8. Price to book value, 37.9 versus 17.9. And price to cash flow is 25.9 versus 23. They do have a good PEG ratio of 2.8 versus 31.6. So that says you're not paying too much for the future growth of the company. Look at the earnings over the last year. They're up 9%. That did beat the industry growth at 8.2. However, sales were down 0.9%, which was worse than a decline in the industry of 0.6%. The analysts give a five-year earnings per share growth rate of 11%, just slightly above the industry at 10.3. They do pay a dividend of 0.6%. They only use 14.9% of their earnings to pay that out. We do see on the balance sheet, current ratio 1 versus 1.1, and debt to equity is 1.4. That is the same as the industry. They still have a very nice profit margin of 26.3 versus 17.5, and return on equity very high, 135. Return on invested capital is only 56, but still very good numbers there. What do you got going forward?
Yeah, current price here for Apple, $183.05. 52-week range, the low $164.08, and the highs $199.62. Year-to-date, the stock's, I'm going to say, about flat, I believe, with the dividend. It hasn't really done much. Looking forward, though, and this is, again, where my concern is with Apple. I go out to September 2025. I see estimated earnings per share here of $7.20. It gives us a target sell price of $119.52. So it trades at a forward PE still at about 25 times.
And we have talked about this company that they do have, the growth is just gone. For the last five quarters, they see no growth. And that the talk, as we talked a little bit earlier, is that, oh, the phone's going to come with AI. And it's just like, oh, okay, well, what is that going to do? And I don't think they just released the new iPads last week. I don't think that was that great of a splash.
I thought it was funny. Oh, this is a great device for AI. Why? It's just like, oh, you say it and it'll go. And I worry that if their June event, their developers event, is the same thing where they're like, oh, the iPhone's great for AI.
Why?
And that's what you're left with. I think this last quarter, really, there was a lot of hype built into that potential June event. I mean, because the quarter itself was, I'm going to say, terrible. I mean, you looked at the numbers. I mean, sales were down, 4%? iPhone sales down 10%. They got all excited.
iPhone sales were down 10%?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they got all excited because revenue growth is now looking for low single digits instead of 1.3% in the next quarter. I mean, that's not good. I mean, considering a company trades at that level.
Yeah. I mean, there's food companies that trade at those levels that you can get for 10, 12 times earnings.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing people got excited about was a massive stock buyback of $110 billion. But again,
Wait. Now, let's slow down on this because they got excited because $110 billion is a big number. But we always talk about a number means nothing at all unless you have something to compare it to. What are we comparing it to?
Yeah, so their market cap, and when I looked at these numbers, the stock was a little bit different. But let's assume the market cap's about $2.9 trillion. That's about 4% of the shares outstanding. I mean, it's not negligible, but I've seen stock buybacks that are much more impressive on a percentage basis than this. And that's what you have to look at. You look at the dividend increase. You already said it's a 0.6% dividend. Who cares?
You know, and they're trying to be shareholder friendly, but they're really not to some degree because, again, the dividend's very low. And again, $100 billion, a lot of money, but not when your market cap is $2.9 trillion. And keep in mind that a company does not have to buy back that stock. They announce it. The reality comes in. Do they really do it or not? I don't think they've done anything yet.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, they have bought back a ton of stock. I think they will do the $110 billion. I'd be shocked if they didn't. But even still, I wouldn't say that it's that impressive. And to trade at a premium valuation, you should have other areas to invest in the business, not return shareholder money, essentially, if you are worth the growth rates. And the last thing I want to point out, too, is just the service revenue. That was what people were like, oh, it was up 14% in the quarter to $23.9 billion. Which, again, sounds pretty good. But remember, Google pays Apple a ton of money for the privilege to actually have them be the default browser on, not the default browser, but the default search engine on Safari. 2022, that dollar figure was $20 billion. So let's annualize the service revenue of $23.9 billion. It comes out to essentially, I'll call it $100 billion. That then means Google is occupying about 20% of all service revenue. We know this is a gripe with the FTC.
Right.
If all of a sudden Google has to reduce that payment, there goes your growth in service revenue as well.
Yeah. And bring up the FTC, and yes, they are going to have a problem, the FTC.
No growth, too expensive.
Yep. All right. Well, there's the closing bell. Thank you for listening to the Smart Investing Show. It is for informational purposes only and should not be used as investment advice. If you'd like to discuss in more detail your investment needs, have other investment questions, feel free to call myself, Brent Wilsey, or Chase Wilsey at 858-224-0004. Again, that's 858-224-0004. Or go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. Again, that's smartinvesting2000.com. A lot of great information there. And you can listen to the podcast if you miss some of the show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week right here on the Smart Investing Show.
To think I did all that, and may I say,